Thirsty Thursday. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets presented by So Rare right here on Game Plus Network. Also live on our FTN Network YouTube page. Chris Meany hanging out with you. A lot to get to as per usual on this show. Yesterday was just one of those days. I'm not going to lie. You know, you want to have good shows. Didn't have a great show yesterday. I was tripping over my words. I still feel like I was jet lagged from the West Coast, coming back over to the East Coast. There's no excuse, but you guys all know this. At your own job, your own work, you just have some of those, one of those days, right? Things are just not working out for you, and you want things to work out for you when you're in front of a camera or behind a mic. You need to be top-notch, and I wasn't, so hopefully we can bring it today. We have a fantastic guest who is going to join me. Yesterday, I wanted to get into the NBA mock draft and the NBA draft lottery from two nights ago with the Spurs winning, and I just feel like I should have a legit NBA mind. I know my NBA, but Zach Graham knows his NBA as well. Kweisenberg DFS is a beautiful NBA mind. This guy knows the ins and outs of absolutely everything in the NBA, including some of these prospects that are going to be taken in about a month and a half. It's about 5 weeks away, the NBA draft. So Kweisenberg DFS is going to join me in the next block. We're going to talk about last night's win in Boston. From the Heat, 46 points in the third quarter. Jimmy Buckets is just phenomenal, man. This guy is just, he's really, really good. And the Heat won last night, road win in Boston, and they became the fifth team in NBA history to win game one on the road in each of their first three rounds. Giddy up. Man, the Heat are just defying all odds. Right? They really are. And they've been really good in these playoffs. They're coached really well by Spoelstra. Like, they just have a really solid, well-rounded team. They play good defense, but it's not a team that really shoots the lights out, right? I think I saw a stat last night that they were shooting 50% from the floor, like midway through the fourth quarter. They hadn't had a game like that really all season long. So for whatever reason, they went into Boston and got it done. And I saw another stat, this one from ESPN Stats and Info, that last year, so the 2022 conference finals happened May 17th. The 2023 conference finals, May 17th. Game ones, by the way. The Heat in game one against Boston, the last two postseasons. Conference finals, May 17th. Both games. The largest deficit they faced, 13 points in both games. And they won. Isn't that a little creepy? Anyone else seem that a little, like, weird? Last two postseasons, same date, largest deficit, still find a way to win in Boston, game one. I thought that was a little strange to see. I wanted to bring that up with you guys. And I'm going to bring it up again with Zach. So we're going to take a look at my mock draft, the top 10. And I want Zach to pick it apart. Maybe we'll talk about the Twins, see who he feels will, you know, maybe be a higher pick or a lower pick. We'll talk about Wemby from like a fantasy basketball standpoint, a dynasty standpoint, a keeper league. Like, how early should this guy go in your fantasy basketball keeper leagues or your redraft leagues next season? We'll talk about that with Zach. Recap last night's action, and then it's game two between the Lakers and the Nuggets here tonight. I almost called them the Golden Nuggets. We will talk about the Vegas Golden Knights here tonight as well, but they are playing tomorrow. But the NHL Conference Finals gets underway tonight with the Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers. So I'm going to roll through my series props for both of them, both series. I got like goal scorer leader, just player versus player, overall series props. Going to pick my winners here with you guys in both series. And then I'm going to give you some props and some picks for tonight's action as well. So a little bit of hockey talk, a lot of afternoon baseball action happening here today. Only a couple games after 7 p.m. Eastern. I want to take care of the Game Plus Network crew. So we're going to talk about the Bluebirds and the New York Yankees. Fun little rivalry, you know, with Aaron Judge peeking into the dugout. Judge, I'd like the celebration that he had. Like, what did he covered his face like that? He's like, hey, you know, I got a single. But why are you doing it on the single? Like a 700-foot bomb the night before, which helped the Yankees win in Toronto. I would have been just doing this around the entire bases, just like tripping up over my home run trot. I love the rivalry. I don't know. I don't want to get too deep into who's cheating and who's not cheating. I mean, You don't care if you don't cheat, I guess. I mean, that's kind of the motto of baseball. Like, these guys are always trying to steal signs and one-up each other. I don't know. I think maybe part of it's on the catcher, Kirk. Right? I think he's kind of tipping pitches, but who knows? I'm going to dive into that game tonight. It's Nestor Cortes, Jose Barrios. We're going to pick on Cortes a little bit. Spoiler alert, I like runs in that game. Cortes is flirting with a 60% fly ball rate. It's the highest mark in baseball. So MLB picks and props for the Blue Jays and for the Yankees. We'll dive into some hockey, but really a lot of NBA here to start. And Zach is hanging by in the green room. So we're going to break right now, talk about the mock draft and talk about his new fancy toy and also get into tonight's action. And Joker is just setting records. It's phenomenal what he's doing. It's video game like. And I want to talk about him with Zach and get his thoughts on it and game two tonight. The Lakers going to even this thing up. We'll find out. Keep her locked. We'll be back in a couple. Hang tight. There's the GOAT. Kweisenberg DFS joining Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network, or FTN Network YouTube page as well. Zach Graham in the house. All smiles, I am sure. I know you and I have been chatting about this draft, I feel like, for a couple of years. And the Spurs kind of slowly, you know, maneuvering little pieces and doing things here and there to put themselves in place to potentially win the NBA draft lottery. And my goodness, like, this is the third time they've won the NBA draft lottery, and everybody is well aware, I'm sure, of the Twin Towers and what happened with the first two picks in Tim Duncan and Robinson. And now you win this NBA draft lottery, the Spurs. And I don't know, like, if expectations are too high, but there's already talk. No, it's like, no way. Clearly, it do agree, like, best prospect since LeBron, and who knows, maybe, like, ever. 7'4", 8-foot wingspan. I see people talk about a mixture of Rudy Gobert mixed with Kevin Durant and Anthony Davis. Like, if you were just to go into the lab and just kind of make somebody, like, create your own player, I'm assuming this is kind of the player that you would make. Maybe be a little bit more built, but like, what can he do? Talk me through the emotions, man, and tell the people what I said yesterday on this show is that you went out and bought a pup and named him Wemby as good luck charm.
I did, and apparently a magic dog. First of all, appreciate you having me again, Chris. Always happy to join Mean Streets. And yeah, you heard me kind of giggling there, you saw me smiling ear to ear. I don't think that's going to stop for me, hopefully for a long time, but certainly throughout this offseason. Like, I've been going back and forth with some folks online and in person about just how high the upside is for Victor Wembanyama. And like, obviously people are coming at me more now because I'm the one that gets to stomp around like, we got him, like, we're coming back, we're back, all this stuff. But just what you did there with the comparison, right? I don't think we've ever, I don't think we've ever had a prospect where you don't just like compare him to a player, but you have to compare him to multiple first ballot Hall of Famers. And it has to be because he is an alien. And are there concerns about his stature, right? The kid is still growing at age 19. Sure. He has gone from like 7'2", 7'3", now to reportedly 7'5". But we've seen guys, not quite to this extent over the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years with, you know, Kevin Durant, and you mentioned Anthony Davis. And I would bring Giannis into that conversation as well, as a guy who, when he was drafted, I think was 6'9 or 6'10, and obviously, you know, kind of ballooned up to the 7-foot behemoth now. And not just his height, but his strength. And so, you know, I don't think you want to put too much muscle mass on a body like Wembanyama. Like, we've seen somebody like Kevin Durant when he was drafted, you know, the hot take then was, oh, he's going to fail in the league because he can't bench 185 pounds. Oh, and guess what? One of the greatest players of all time. And so you could go through all of the, you know, quote unquote red flags with any of these top prospects throughout the history of basketball and throughout the history of sports, right? I mean, I saw Woj. I don't know if I'm with him on like the best prospect in all of team sports ever, but just the fact that that's being thrown out there. And while some people are reacting like, okay, like let's pump the brakes, and I might be in that group as well. It just shows the promise that this player has and the reason why Spurs fans like myself are on cloud nine and, again, not coming down anytime soon. And the fact that all the other fans of teams in the lottery are shedding a tear this week.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely shedding a tear. Are you kidding me? I loved the emotion when from the Spurs brass when they found out that they had the first pick. You love the emotion. Game changer. I saw the comment from Waj, too. I thought it was a little aggressive, but at the same time, I do feel like it's fair. Like, in my lifetime, covering multiple sports and following drafts and draft prospects, I don't remember this type of hype. And from an NBA standpoint, it definitely is, like, the best prospect since LeBron. And I've heard other people have been around the game much longer than me evaluating the game. Talk about, you know, at this point for Wembanyama, the prospect himself, more so a better all around prospect than LeBron. And LeBron was fantastic in high school, like coming out. It's all anybody was really talking about. And he didn't let anyone down, but like in the same sentence as him and Kareem, like it's absolutely bonkers. You touched on the statue and the build a little bit, because I guess that's the only red flag that you can say, because some of these players that are kind of built like him, and not saying because he's 7'4", when he enters the league, he's going to be like the tallest player. I think he's tied with, I forget who, the tallest active player in the league. So it's still very rare, but some tall, lanky players don't really, like Giannis comes to mind, and KD, they come to mind, but some other players, like, injuries kind of catch up to them, and the physical aspect, they got to build into their body, but there's really nothing. Like, what can you tell me about his game? Like, in the French league, 21 elite points and boards, blocks, 3.1 blocks, 10.5 boards, 21.6 points. Everybody's seen the clip of like shooting a three and then going and get his own rebound. Like, off, like, just if you watch this guy on like a highlight reel or film on YouTube or whatever, you're just going to be blown away and amazed of the things that he can do, and still is just super, super young. I know you're like smiling this anyways. Like, this is not a homer thing. You know what I mean? Like, we've been talking about this generational player for a couple years now.
Yeah.
Like, what is he going to bring to the table in his first year in the NBA? Like, what is his numbers going to look like, do you think?
I think they're going to be, you know, he's not going to lead the league in scoring. I don't think he's going to be a problem. Man, some of these things I just haven't even thought about yet. Like, can he be an all-star next year? Like, probably not, but I wouldn't put it past the kid just because of how impressive he is. But like, let's go back to what you said about like watching the film from what he's done. Like, I think the most people's experience with watching Wembanyama was probably when Mets 92 came over here and played G League Ignite, a little two-game classic there earlier this year. And he was fantastic. He was the best player on the floor. Like, Scoot Henderson showed out in one of those games as well. But Wemby was just unstoppable in that game. And of course, G League Ignite is not a one-to-one comparison with an NBA team, especially a good NBA team or a, you know, playoff caliber type of basketball. But going back to when he was with Lyon 2 years ago, I mean, this guy came up through the club that Tony Parker owns. So that was always on the back burner in my mind. Like, man, we have this connection with this kid, and the team is obviously going in the direction of a tank, and holy cow, would it be great. Great is an understatement if that worked out for them. I'm, of course, still mind blown that it did. I had some worries when he left Lyon last year for, and I'm not great with the French geography, even worse at speaking French. So I'm not going to attempt the location in terms of the name for Mets 92, Metropolitans 92, they're the team that he went to this year. But, you know, watching some more coverage, like reading more about this kid and the reasons why he made that move and his work ethic, both, you know, in the gym and his demeanor and behavior and attitude off the court. You know, it makes sense to me now. And I was saying this a couple of weeks ago, not just because now he's coming to the Spurs. He went there to try to learn how to lead a team, because Asphalt, the Lyon team, right, Tony Parker's team, is a EuroLeague quality team. Like, they have seasoned professionals, some veteran NBA guys that are over there. You know, they had maybe somebody like a Gershon Yabusele is a name that maybe would be familiar to some NBA fans. So going to, like, he was playing around 17 and a half minutes a game in that EuroLeague club with Lyon 2 years ago, and then was able to play that full, like, 32-33, I'm the man type of role with Mets. And sure, like, is the competition lesser when he's not getting that EuroLeague run? Yes. But I do think his previous experience playing a role on a team at that type of level, you know, EuroLeague, second best league in the world, and now getting a year of experience leading a club just in that French league, I think it's really promising. And the most promising thing as a Spurs fan right now should be his reaction to getting for San Antonio. He hasn't been drafted yet. His reaction to San Antonio winning the lottery. Yeah. And the comments after in the interviews about, you know, not only did he say he manifested it, saying he knew that the universe sent him a sign, he's coming to San Antonio. You know, he had great things to say about the organization, his relationship with Tony Parker, the nation of France and their relationship to the Spurs organization with Tony Parker and Boris Diaw and the like, you know, Nando DiColo for the diehards. Yeah, man. I'm over the moon. I've never giggled more in my life. It's incredible as a Spurs fan. And again, like, I think as an NBA fan, you know, if you're with the Rockets or one of those other Spurs rivals, I get not liking him going to San Antonio. But if as a fan of basketball in general, I think it's hard to argue that it's not that it would be better for him to land in a spot like a Charlotte. Or even a Houston, if I can take a dig at my in-state rivals. But like San Antonio has, there you go. There's the magic pup for you there right after that envelope was unsealed. I think it would be tough to argue against San Antonio. Maybe not the best place for him because, you know, who knows how long Popovich is going to be around. I think he might stay around a few more years.
May as well.
You know, Spurs have 5 years with him, and it's a conversation for another day, how they should structure going forward and how quickly they should try to make a push. Because this team has a lot of cap space and they have to get to that salary floor this year. But just looking ahead just a little bit, I think next summer they should have enough cap space for two max slots. And who wants to come win a title in San Antonio?
Listen, there's a lot of marquee free agents available that you're talking about after next season as well. I just honestly, as a Dallas guy, it was like, I was, you know, selfishly, I think between the two, you know, San Antonio and Houston, I was thinking maybe Houston because I just don't believe in them and as an organization to kind of like build properly around him and support, like get a good supporting cast around him. But the Spurs are just a first class organization, right? They've gotten it done for years. They're well coached and they just get it. So
they've got the draft capital too, Chris, like the DeJounte Murray trade, the DeMar DeRozan trade, even the Jakob Poeltl trade, like they have Derek White trade. They have unprotected Hawks picks, unprotected swaps. They've got lightly protected first. They've got a top one protected swap with Boston in 2028. Who knows if Boston is good 5 years from now? Like, and they can move some of those assets. You may not have to just build through free agency. You can go out and take a swing or two in the trade market as well. So Brian Wright has done a fantastic job setting up the franchise for this to occur. And it's all coming up silver and black right now.
It really is. I'm so jelly. Another five championships, I think, headed your way for sure. It does seem like
We'll take one.
You're not greedy at all. It does seem like the perfect match. And I saw the quote, too. I was listening to him talk about Tony Parker and wanted to be the first French player taken, you know, an NBA draft. And it just seemed like people talk about the NHL draft being rigged. I don't know. Maybe the NBA one was rigged a little bit, but good for you. I did tweet the video. I'm going to post the link inside the description as well. It's great. You and Pfeiffer together during the draft lottery and the emotion. And I love it. That's why people hang out on the show. We're all sports fans. We've all been there. We get excited about our teams when certain things happen. It's fantastic. I still want to talk with you about Wemby and I got a mock here. I want to show you in a second, Quan. Just wait 1 minute. I just want to know, like, and I know you play a lot of DFS and maybe fantasy basketball or dynasty and keeper leagues, not totally your thing, but like Jokic was number one in fantasy basketball this year, SGA 2, Embiid 3, Tatum 4, Bridges like was the fifth best fantasy basketball player this year. Like he was unbelievable down the stretch of the season after the trade. Vucevic, Mitchell, like where does he fit into a redraft? Like DFS aside, like if you're just doing a reach, is this guy a first round pick? Like I would assume so that people are going to be taking him and thinking about him after the first four or five guys are off the board.
Yeah. I obviously have not dove in too deep to my 2023-24 season long rankings, but you got to think that the ceiling is there for that type of draft capital in season long leagues. And not just that, like, I think we'll be having a pretty significant conversation about where do we take him in best ball next year too, on sites that offer that. Like, because again, I think the Spurs have a big decision to make. Do you kind of try to go for it next year, and go for it in the sense of, can you get into the play-in? Can you maybe get up to that sixth seed? Obviously a lot of that, we have to wait to see how good Wimby is, how everybody else can kind of fit in around him, because they do have a lot of good pieces. And when I say good, I'm talking third, fourth, fifth option on a championship team with your Keldons, your Devin Vassells, Jeremy Sohan, who had a very promising end to the season last year after I thought he got up to a pretty slow start. And again, they've got cap space, and could they, I mean, Chris, I know I'm diverting just back into total Spurs talk here and not fantasy, but could they trade for somebody like a Chris Paul, a distressed asset like that? Trey Jones is a free agent, so like I want to bring him back. But again, I think they can do a lot of things to kind of maneuver around what they've got right now, not lock themselves into a long-term core here, and continue to build around Wembanyama. In terms, going back to your actual question here and delaying no longer, absolute ceiling of first round pick, probably not top half of that first round, but anything later than like top of the third, I think that's an extreme value, because the guy's going to come in, contribute high statistical values and across the box score, every category, pretty much right off the rip. And again, the only way I can see it really going sideways with that high draft capital we think we're going to spend on him is if it doesn't come together and the Spurs shut him down a little bit early, when it's crunch time for not just your season-long teams in right. those playoff matchups, but you're advancing throughout best ball tournaments and you really need those guys that you draft early to play throughout the regular season.
Yeah, I think redraft and best ball, certainly there's a case to be made for a low-end first-round pick and just kind of taking that upside. But I know people are going to be very aggressive from a keeper and dynasty standpoint. Yeah. I know everybody's keeper leagues are very different. I'm thinking about a couple of my keeper leagues where you keep two or three guys. This guy's just going to be the first overall pick in those formats. Like, there's just studs that are kept for years, like Tatum and Brown. Like, certain younger players have just been kept. And again, I know everybody's format is a little bit different, but if I'm starting a fresh dynasty, fantasy basketball dynasty league, I'm probably thinking about him like three or four overall, and just like growing through the growing pains of the first couple of years, but just having that stud on my team. So that's fantastic. Here's the mock that I came up with. I don't call myself an NBA expert at all. I may be just off the rails here with Scoot Henderson just second overall straight up to the Hornets. Obviously, Wemby there at pick one. Brandon Miller at three. I've kind of seen him all over the place. I know there's some off-court issues that, you know, just wanted to bring to people's attention. But who knows with the Trailblazers? I think that they're a team that could maybe trade back. You got the Twins there, and Amen and Assur Thompson. I got Amen to the Rockets and then Assur to the Magic. I had the Mavs, like, selfishly. Hendricks kind of falling down there. I think he's a guy that could maybe jump up a little bit, but we don't have to go into too much detail here, Zach, but what do you think of this board? Is there a prospect that apart from Victor that you really do like?
Well, I like a lot of these guys, and I don't think there's anybody in here that I would say, oh, like, I don't see that guy going top 10. I think there's guys like, you got Taylor Hendricks down there at 10. I think he could go a little bit higher. Cam Whitmore, while I think he could absolutely be the pick at 5, and I would not hate that either. I think he's a guy that could also slide down to that 8, 9, 10 range, and I do think the Thompson brothers, like Amen, is in all likelihood going to go first, but I think they could also slide a little bit. There's just a lot of uncertainty for me after the top two in terms of prospects. Like, obviously I have Wimby in a tier of his own, and I think Scoot Henderson is just a little cut above the Brandon Millers and the Amen Thompsons. Okay. But there's also a case to be made every year for these big wings like Brandon Miller, like Cam Whitmore, like a Taylor Hendricks, even though Hendricks, obviously, like, I don't think he's a guy that's been kind of shooting up draft boards over the last couple months, like the UCF guy, like those type of 6'7 to 6'10 wings who can score, who've got that size, they've got the strength, they can get to the rim. Those are the guys you see on these championship winning teams, right? Your Jason Tatums, guys like that. So the Hornets themselves are in a little bit of a bind here because you've got LaMelo Ball, but his extension, like he's extension eligible very soon. Are you going to pair him with Scoot? There's only one Ball. And I know that's a cliche, but like it's true with those two guys. Yeah, and I'm super high on both of them. So, okay. So you say maybe we're going to pass on Scoot because of LaMelo and we're going to take a guy like Brandon Miller. But okay. Say what you want to about the off the court issues for a guy like Miles Bridges. We don't need to get into that now. I, of course, have thoughts. They're not great, but if that is in the past and his suspension is in the past, the Hornets are going to sign this guy. And so like Brandon Miller, Miles Bridges, like I do think I would take Brandon Miller over Bridges, but again, it feels a little bit redundant. So at the end of the day, if you don't trade out of that pick, you probably just take the best player available. To me, that's Scoot. So I'm with you there on him going to the Hornets at two, but I think they could maybe shift around there. We know you mentioned the Blazers could trade out of that pick. I think that some, you know, rumors, whispers about them shopping that pick around, trying to use that to bring in more pieces to build around Damian Lillard. And they continue to go in the opposite direction of what I've been saying for 2+ years now. Move Damian Lillard, draft Brandon Miller, and let's build around Shaedon Sharpe and Brandon Miller and the likely treasure trove of assets in return. You know, whether that's other young players or draft capital or likely both that you get back in return for a Damian Lillard. Like that's the move I would make. I think it's overdue. And they, because of their draft lottery success here, I think they have an opportunity to really set things up for the future. Doesn't appear that they're going to do that. So it'll be interesting to see who wants to jump up and get Scoot or Brandon Miller. It might be Houston. Because you look at somebody like Amen Thompson, I know he is a sizable guy in terms of a primary ball handler, but James Harden, it appears, is coming back to Houston. So to me,
and
Brandon
D'Antoni,
Miller.
Just bring the whole band back.
Right. And rumors of James wanting a 4-year contract. Yeah. Do it, Houston. Do it.
Yes, please.
So I think that if they had the opportunity to trade up and grab somebody like Brandon Miller, I think that is something that the Rockets should be really interested in. And to me, that would be a huge win. Not that, you know, getting either of the Thompson brothers is bad, but I think Brandon Miller just a little bit higher upside and kind of just that the profile of that player that you see time and time again in these NBA Finals matchups.
All year, I just thought Miller 2. And it wasn't so much about the off-court stuff, but I really do like Scoot's game, man. I think he's a really good player overall. And I think it could work with Ball, but yeah, you do bring up some good points about there is only one Ball there. But, man, I really do like his game, and I think he will be the second pick. But, yeah, I think we're going to see some chaos, whether it's the Trailblazers trading back or maybe just shocking somebody with a different off the board kind of pick, but all those players I love. I mean, I didn't put Grady Dick on there. I'm a Kansas guy. Like I think that guy's a hell of a shooter, man. Like I almost put him to the Mavs, but I think the Mavs need something. They need something that can help them on both ends of the court with that 10th pick.
Yeah. I get big Corey Kispert vibes from Grady Dick, and maybe that's not fair to Grady, but like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I do think somebody like Taylor Hendricks, like you had the Mavs taking him at 10. I think that fits what they need to put around Luka a little bit more. And also, shout out to your boys. Shout out to Cubes being willing to pay the fines for the tanking at the end of the year. None of us liked it at the time. But guess what? It worked. They kept their pick.
Yeah.
And that's what they needed. So like whether they take a guy here or they move it for other, you know, more immediate pieces to put around Luka, it worked. So what do people have to say now?
Listen, they had no shot of winning any games at all. Clearly, they were like the worst team in basketball when they acquired Kyrie. They couldn't stop a nosebleed. And also just the Trailblazers did it too. They just tanked differently. They shut down everybody for weeks and weeks and weeks. The Mavs were just silly about how they did it and talking about it the way that they did in a press conference and things like that with Jason Kidd. But I told you I was only going to keep you for 15 minutes. We've gone super long. Do you have like 2 or 3 more minutes left in you?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Let's break, Quan. Let's break. I got to get Zach's thoughts on what Joker is doing and just quick thoughts on tonight's game. So we'll be back in 2 minutes. Hang tight, guys. Welcome back in game two tonight. Lakers in Nuggets. Denver won game one, and it was a highly entertaining game. There were stretches where it looked like Denver was going to blow them out, but they were led, of course, by Joker. Another phenomenal showing from him. 34 points, 21 boards, 14 assists, 2 blocks. He had 3 trays. First player in NBA history to average a 30-point triple-double on 40% shooting in a playoff run. He's averaging 36, 14, and 12 on 71% true shooting last 6 games. Only player in NBA history with multiple playoff games of 30 points, 20 boards, and 10 assists. Tied for third all-time in playoff triple-doubles already. Just records and records and records. The only player in NBA history with multiple playoff games of 30 points, 20, and the 10 there. Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did it once. I mean, this guy's done it multiple times. Like, again, just the class that he is in right now. Other stats I can read you off. It's like, oh, only guys since Oscar Robertson. It's just like craziness that I didn't see any of this stuff. I only read about it. I was watching like highlights, but we're seeing it firsthand. 5.5-point favorites here today. -220 on the money line. The Lakers +185. We have a total of 226.5. What'd you make of game one? Did the Lakers have any chance here? I thought they hung around, man. Like, not bad for the first game in Denver. I do remember, Zach, when you came on, we did the preview. You talked about the Nuggets. You said Nuggets, Nuggets, Nuggets. Everybody's talking about everybody else in the league. But Denver's been the best team in the West since, what, January? And this was a team that had like 11-1 championship odds. And here they are, 3 wins away from getting to the NBA Finals. What do you think's going to happen this evening?
I mean, I think the Nuggets get the win here. But I was intrigued with the changes that we saw Darvin Ham make in that second half, putting Rui Hachimura on Nikola Jokic. Like, you're not stopping this guy. And he fooled everybody, including myself. Down the last like month, 6 weeks of the regular season, like you said, they were in first by a wide margin out west, locked up that home court, and kind of just sat back, rested on their laurels a little bit. And guess what? Nikola Jokic is still that MVP caliber player, maybe the best player in the league right now. I think right now it's hard to argue against it. You mentioned the stats, like, he's just unreal, man. And I imagine that there is some, maybe some regret by the MVP voters. Like, I understand it's a regular season award, but I think there was a right answer here, and I think it was Nikola Jokic. You know, voter fatigue be damned. Like, 3 in a row, I think, is probably the appropriate thing. And I'm not taking anything away from Joel Embiid, but I mean, I just think this guy is on another level. But on the other side, and you're asking about the Lakers, do they have a chance? It's gonna come down to the Lakers' best player. And that's Anthony Davis. And he was fantastic in game one. Like, as much as no team has an answer right now for Jokic, the Nuggets don't have an answer for Anthony Davis either. So if he, like, what they're going to need out of him is him to break the mold of the on-again, off-again pattern that he had throughout the first two rounds of these NBA playoffs. And, like, both teams in game one, the shooting was insane. Both teams could not miss throughout stretches of that game. And then you look, last night it continued for one of the teams in Miami, and the Celtics, tough start to that series. I do still think they get out of the East and get to the finals. But tonight, I mean, you got another big Rui shooting game, and it looks like he may get the start here tonight, I assume, for Dennis Schroeder. It could be D'Angelo Russell. We'll see. Schroeder's still going to play a pretty big role in this series with his defensive abilities on Jamal Murray. But you got the game from Rui Hachimura, 8 of 11 from the field. You got another good Austin Reeves game, who has been fantastic. And I hope he continues to play well so the Lakers have to overpay him when he's up for an extension. 5 of 9 from 3 for him in that one, over 40 minutes again. Like, and you still don't get the win. Like, it felt like this was one of the bullets the Lakers had in terms of those, the secondary guys, right? The role players having those big games that you need to steal a game on the road, especially in the elevation, and 40 and 10 plus 5 stocks from Anthony Davis. And you still come up a little bit short. I think the Nuggets take care of business here again tonight. I did, before the series, however, have Denver in 7. I don't think all hope is lost for the Lakers. I mean, you've got Anthony Davis. He can be the best player on the court in this series any given night. It's going to take a Herculean effort like we saw in game one. But again, both teams shot the absolute lights out. And it was kind of highlighted by the end of the third quarter when Jokic just hucked that 40-footer up there, right? And Anthony Davis looked back at him like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It was a wild game. It was highly entertaining.
It was.
Third-party perspective, if we get even two more games in this series like that one, it's going to be great.
I'm with you. I think it goes the distance. I think that there's some positives that the Lakers can take away from that game, like especially what you alluded to, like the halftime adjustments going into Denver on the road and kind of hanging around in that game. So I think that they cover tonight. I think I would lean in the 5.5 with the Lakers, but I do agree that the Nuggets win this game. But it, you know, you're not out of it until you lose on your home court. Of course, LA is going to have to find a way to win in Denver, but highly, highly, highly entertaining. And it's hard not to take the over 28.5 on Joker on his point prop for sure. We'll get you out of here. You just kind of alluded to, I was going to get quick thoughts on the Celtics, but a tough go for them. Miami 46 points in the third quarter. And I saw a stat as well. I mean, they've won game one on the road in each of their first three rounds, fifth team to do so. The 2021 Hawks, the 99 Knicks, the 89 Bulls, and the 81 Rockets. The Knicks and the Bulls did get to the NBA Finals, but they didn't win. And I also saw this last night from ESPN Stats and Info. The Heat in game one against Boston were the last two postseasons. Both postseason games came on May 17th. Game one in Boston, and they had the largest deficit by 13 points, and the Heat still found a way to win in both of those games. So there's something about the Celtics, maybe game one in the Eastern Conference Finals against Miami, but they're no slouch either, man. They can play defense and don't really look at them as an offensive powerhouse, but Jimmy is just always taking his game to another level on this stage and in this moment. Zach, appreciate your time, man. That was fantastic to kind of chop it up with you. I was thinking about you throughout that entire NBA draft lottery, and good for you. All smiles for sure. So give the dog a little bit of a pet, a little good luck charm for you. Enjoy Wemby. There it is one more time. Link inside the description. It's actually fantastic to watch it all happen live with you and Pfeiffer. Enjoy the basketball tonight. Enjoy the NBA finals and things like that. And hopefully we can chop it up again soon, sir. Quisenberg DFS, check him out. He's still giving all kinds of great advice over at FTNDaily.com. We're going to switch gears, talk a little hockey next on Mean Streets. Keep it locked. Welcome back in. So the Eastern Conference Finals get underway tonight in Carolina between the Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers. And the Carolina Hurricanes are favored, as you see here, at minus 145. Florida checking in at plus 125 and a total of 5.5. We're going to dive deeper into these two playoff series this afternoon live on our FTN Network YouTube page and also on Game Plus Network. Dangle Bet Seller, we have Pete Jensen of NHL.com joining me here. I don't know if you have the look at Pete, so sharp there. Who's that dude in front of him? I don't know, but Pete looking great there. Really looking forward to the conversation. But as for tonight, I do like the Hurricanes to get the 1-0 series lead, but I am going to lead here with the Florida Panthers to win this series. I don't know if you have the series prices handy, Quan. No big deal if you don't. We're going to roll through that over at Dangle Bet Selly, but we do have some series props that I wanted to bring up with you guys as well for the Hurricanes and the Panthers. So here we go. Carter Verhaeghe had a really good second round, and I'm totally in on what he has to offer. I'd like his placement on that top line with pass first player Alexander Barkov. 5 goals at 5-5 in these playoffs, which ranks third overall. So he's scoring at even strength, which is a key to me. The Hurricanes have the best penalty kill remaining in the playoffs. His 10 points at 5-5 are tied for first. Only Hintz and Kane and Matthews have more scoring chances than Verhaeghe at 5-5 in these playoffs. These two teams played each other 3 times. Carolina was very successful in the season series, especially in the last game of the season, the last night in the NHL. It was Carolina's 6-4 win at Florida. Burns had 2 goals and 5 shots. Montour had 6 shots. We'll keep those guys in mind here as we walk through some of these plays. But Florida, 3-0 win at home, November 9th. Carolina, 4-0 win at home, December 30th. And then the 6-4 blow at Florida with really a lot on the line for both teams. Carolina fighting for first in the division and Florida fighting for first in the just to get into the playoffs in that wild card spot. So for Hagee to lead the series in goals at plus 650, that's a unit play for me. Half a unit on Seth Jarvis for goals at 11-1. Still going to be on that top line. It sounds like Teuvo Teravainen could return. He's like 23, 24 days away from having surgery to repair a broken hand. That's craziness, but it does sound like he is going to suit up at some point in this series. I got Verhaeghe for the most points at 11-1. I have Verhaeghe more goals than Seth Jarvis at minus 130. This all from DraftKings. Verhaeghe more points than Martin Natchez at plus 100. And then Natchez more goals than Alexander Barkov at minus 120. Only 1 point for Barkov in the series against the Maple Leafs. More of a pass-first guy, as I alluded to. So really riding Verhaeghe here. And I like the Florida Panthers to win this series. I think it's going to go seven. I don't know Bobrovsky if he's going to be as strong, but I think, you know, he's in the zone right now. And I think we need to really, really thinking about him as the Conn Smythe winner, as the MVP for the entire playoffs. That's what Conn Smythe is. The entire playoffs, maybe more weighted what happens in the Stanley Cup Finals for sure. But this guy has been a game changer for Florida since he's come into the series, since he came into the series against the Boston Bruins. So those are the series props for me. Florida in seven. Let's break and let's dive into the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference matchup. And also, I do have some props for tonight that we'll get into as well. So we'll be back here in a couple. Welcome back in. Let's switch gears and talk about the Western Conference Finals. And this one should be good. Not that the East won't be fine, but these two teams can absolutely bring it. They're stacked on offense. They got great blue liners. They really are deep. Both teams are three lines deep. And both of these players on the board right now have just been fantastic here in the playoffs. I like Dallas. It's so tough for me to call. I had Dallas in the Western Conference Finals, but I did have the Oilers there. I've always been in on this Golden Knights team. I have some questions about them in goal. It's really it. Aiden Hill has stepped in for Laurent Brisebois. He's been great. Jake Ottinger was pulled a couple times in the last round. He wasn't fantastic, but I do think the best goalie remaining in the playoffs is Jake Ottinger. And I think this Dallas team is going to win the Stanley Cup. I think whoever gets by here is going to beat whoever gets by in the East. I think both of these teams are deeper than the teams that they're going to face, whoever it is, Carolina or Florida. So I'm really drinking the Kool-Aid out West here. And this is what I have for series props. And I am going to give some love to those two studs, as I mentioned. I'm going to put a unit on Roope Hintz to lead the series in goals at plus 650. And I'm going to do the same thing here with Jonathan Marchessault. So I would hope I get one of them and prop about five or six units. As for Jonathan Marchessault, so man, he was fantastic in Edmonton when I was at that game live in game six at Rogers Center, Rogers Place. He was just absolutely all over the ice and a fantastic second round. These are his numbers in the second round of the playoffs. 5 goals, second most. 8 points, fourth most. He led in shots with 34. He had 46 shot attempts, which is one behind Evan Bouchard for the most. He had a league high 27 scoring chances, 15 high danger chances inside the top five. The expected goal rate also inside the top five. How about his 5-5 numbers? 4 goals, first, 6 points, second, 19 shots, first, 29 shot attempts, third, 18 scoring chances, third, 13 high danger chances, third, also third in expected goals as well. So he was bringing it not only on the power play. He got put on that first unit. He wasn't on the first power play unit in the opening round. He was put on that first power play unit. He's getting generating chances at 5-5 with Jack Eichel as a center, as a pass first guy. So I'm taking shots on both of those guys. As for Wyatt Johnson, this is like a little bit of a sprinkle. 0.25 units, 22-1. To lead the series in goals. His 3.59 expected goals for at 5-5 ranks fifth in the playoffs. He's eighth in scoring chances at 5-5. The rookie has 4 goals through 13 games. That line, dominant at home in the playoffs. Mismatch all across the board with Dadonov and Jamie Benn. So a little bit of a sprinkle there at 22-1. I got Marchessault to lead the series in points at 18-1. Hintz more points than Stone. Marchessault more points than Stevenson. And Pavelski more points than Miro Heiskanen. And as for Roope Hintz, you know, he's second in the playoffs in goals with 9.19. He ranks inside the top 10 in shot attempts. He's fourth in expected goals and scoring chances. Only Matthews, McDavid, and Draisaitl have a higher expected goal share and more scoring chances than Roope Hintz. Only Tavares and Hyman have had more high danger chances than Hintz in these playoffs. And at 5-5, only Matthews has more scoring chances than Hintz. And only Timo Meier has more high danger chances than Roope Hintz at 21. This guy's been all over the ice. He's been absolutely fantastic throughout these entire playoffs. And that's why I'm leaning here with Dallas. Yeah, I don't want people to be confused. Marchessault could still lead the series in goals and points and have more points than Chandler Stephenson, but Dallas Stars could still win this series. I expect it to be deep, highly entertaining, 6 or 7 games between these two teams. I would not be shocked Dallas won all three meetings against Vegas this season. They had a 4-0 win in Vegas January 16th. They had a 3-2 shootout win in Vegas February 25th. These two teams played April 8th with a lot on the line for both squads, and Dallas squeaked it out, a 2-1 shootout win. So both wins, the last two for Dallas, went to a shootout. They were low scoring. Man, the series against Seattle, the over hit in 6 of the 7 games, I'm not sure it's going to be quite like that, but there's definitely enough firepower on both sides as well. Adam Szymanski in the house, Pavelski more goals than Riley Smith, 143 at Bet Rivers. That one I do like as well. Riley Smith is pretty decent, but I do like Pavelski, even though slightly juiced. And we will have an underdog best ball show tomorrow, Medi, talking a little football. As for tonight, props, you got those one, Quan. Let's chuck that up. Brent Burns, he's got 95 shot attempts in the playoffs. That's the most. That's all strengths. 99 shot attempts. I mentioned when these two teams played at the final game of the season, Burns had a couple goals and he cleared 3.5 pretty easily. Montour had 6 shots in that game as well. Montour's got 80 shot attempts, which is tied for the 7th most here in the playoffs. So I'm going with the two defensemen that I feel like will lead their teams in ice time here tonight, and also the shot attempts on the power play. Both players like to join the rush, and they're not afraid to shoot the puck. So two defensemen for shot props. It's hard. You can't be parlaying these unless you parlay something with tomorrow. And I have a couple options for you. Martin Natchez with Rupe Hintz at +170 on DraftKings. Both guys just too juice to take as a single. Jordan Martinook, we've been down this road throughout the entire playoffs, at 1.5 with Wyatt Johnson, also at 1.5 at +147. So a couple options for tonight and for tomorrow. Seth Jarvis to pick up a point at -128 and Carter Verhaeghe to pick up a point at -140. I think those two guys up on the top line, I think that's the best value for a point. So that's what I'm looking at for this evening. Again, check out Dangle Betselli here in just a few minutes, and we will dive into this a little bit larger. Conn Smythe odds, all that good stuff. One more segment. Blue Jays and Yankees. Going to tee that game up for you here tonight on Mean Streets. Back in a couple. Yankees and Blue Jays happening tonight in Toronto. It's been a highly entertaining series. The Yankees have taken 2 of 3 so far. We had the Bluebirds walk off last night, and Toronto favored here at -129. I do like Toronto to win this game. I like them on the money line here. Barrios has been actually a little bit better lately. I know we've been hard on him here on this show to start this season, but he's cooled off a little bit, or I guess he's heated up, I suppose, but he's not walking as many guys, not giving up as much hard contact as he did last season and early on. But I do like the over here, over 9 runs at +100. I think the Jays are going to get to Nestor Cortes. He hasn't pitched into the 6th inning in his last 4 starts, only twice in 8 outings this season, 8 walks in his last 3 starts, 4 homers and 14 runs over that span. He's got a 7.20 ERA on the road in 15 innings. Righties are crushing him, slashing .281, .340, and .489. 6 of the 7 homers he's allowed have been to righties. He's got a 58% fly ball rate, which is the highest mark in baseball, and 48% for his career. So those are all red flags for me. I think a couple righties will take him deep. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Matt Chapman are on my board. I think Bo Bichette also in play. I think those heavy righties, right, in the Jays lineup, and I think they're going to get to Cortes early and often. As for Barrios, 4 home runs allowed in his last 3 starts, 6 walks over that span as well. And he does still have an alarming barrel rate at 8.8%. It was top 10 in baseball last year, just above 9%. So I do think we're going to see some runs over 9. And give me Vlad Guerrero Jr. to go deep today, and Matt Chapman over 1.5 total bases. Good luck around the diamond, on the hard court, on the ice. We'll be back tomorrow. Best ball draft. Cheers.